There, do you have any idea what you're listening to?
London Philharmonic?
It's Venus.
Huh?
Venus.
Why not? We've bounced signals off the moon's surface. There's no reason that Venus shouldn't radiate impulses.
I don't mean the static. Can't you hear it, the other thing?
What other thing?
Listen to it, Paul. Listen to the voice.
Media Geek. This is your weekly look at a world of grassroots, independent media, and our media environment. My name is Paul Reese, and I'm your host. Producer Drew Tirico is at the controls. On today's program, the Christian Clear Channel and the Underground Trade and Low Power Translator Stations. We'll be talking to John Anderson again, who's here to help us dig through the data about the trading of little stations to create big satellite networks. And of course, we get caught up on news of our media environment. Do stay tuned. Here at Media Geek, we try to bring you news of our media environment that often gets left out of the electronic media and buried back in the business pages of the print media. Media news is treated like business news, only of importance to stockholders and investors. But we believe it's important to our democracy, and that's why we highlight it. The new chair of the Senate Commerce Committee, Ted Stevens of Alaska, told the National Association of Broadcasters Leadership Conference that he'd favor legislation that would require cable television to obey the same indecency rules as broadcast television. At his speech on March 1st, Stevens said he would also favor requiring cable companies to carry multiple channels from a single digital broadcaster, provided those channels provided, quote, public interest, end quote, content. With the help of federal court decisions, cable has repeatedly fended off restrictions on its content, even during the hours children are likely to be watching, by arguing that First Amendment law won't permit restriction on cable if parents have other options for shielding their kids from objectionable shows. And in an interview with Billboard Radio Monitor, Clear Channel's chief legal officer said that he believes Congress should extend indecency regulations to satellite radio. He also stated that he believes there's interest in Congress in the issue, arguing that satellite radio is almost as free as traditional broadcast radio, given that free subscriptions are being included with the purchase of some new cars equipped with satellite radio receivers. XM Satellite's VP of Corporate Affairs calls Levin's lobbying efforts, quote, typical behavior on the part of big broadcasters resisting new competing technologies, end quote. Outgoing FCC Chairman Michael Powell has stated recently that he does not believe the FCC should endeavor to extend indecency regulations to cable or satellite. He told the Fox News Channel on March 3rd that he believes legislation to achieve this would be unconstitutional. The Supreme Court ruling allowing the FCC to police indecency on broadcast television and radio is written specifically for broadcast, based upon both the prevalence of broadcast media and the responsibility of broadcasters who use the publicly owned spectrum.
An Illinois bill that would have outlawed municipal telecommunications systems, including broadband wireless networks, failed to be entered into the Illinois Senate by its sponsor, Steven Rauschenberger, the assistant Republican leader of the 22nd District. Unfavorable press coverage and pressure from citizen and community groups is believed to have played a role in the bill of not being submitted. A coalition formed under the umbrella called Get Illinois Online have been working on the issue and continue to organize in anticipation of a rewrite of the state's main legislation concerning the internet and telecommunications. However, similar anti-municipal telecommunications laws have been entered in several states, the most recent being Texas. Laws have been passed in 14 states, including Pennsylvania. Most of these different state bills have very similar boilerplate language drafted by the telecommunications industry, looking to keep municipalities and other nonprofit groups from providing inexpensive or free network services that the industry has failed to provide in a timely manner. In 2004, the Supreme Court affirmed the political right of states to establish their own community internet ventures. Thus, major telecommunications companies have been forced to lobby state by state to repeal this right. Even though the anti-municipal broadband bill in Illinois is currently dead, there are fears that the bill could be resuscitated and slipped into larger and unrelated bills, making it easier to pass.
Sinclair Broadcast Group, owner of the largest group of TV stations in the United States, said on March 3rd that it has asked the Supreme Court to review an appeals court ruling on media ownership rules. The June 2004 appeals court ruling had ordered the FCC to continue to enforce a rule which requires at least 8 independently owned and operated full-power television stations remain in any given market. This rule blocks Sinclair from owning more than one station in several markets where it has planned to buy additional ones. In prior litigation brought by Sinclair in 2002, the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals remanded the 8 voices test to the FCC and ordered the agency to either justify or eliminate the rule. The FCC responded, stating and explicitly concluding that the 8 voices test could not be justified, that, quote, it is not necessary in the public interest to promote competition, and that retaining the current rule does not promote and may even hinder program diversity and localism, end quote. Subsequently, and in June 2004, the Third Circuit Court of Appeals in Philadelphia ordered the FCC to continue to apply the 8 voices test.
On Thursday, March 3rd, the FCC, under outgoing Chairman Michael Powell, agreed to fine a small internet service provider $15,000 for blocking voice over IP internet traffic. As we've mentioned previously, voice over IP, or VoIP, is similar to telephone data, except that it uses the nominally free internet as opposed to proprietary telephone lines. Powell stated in a press release, quote, the industry must adhere to certain consumer protection norms if the internet is to remain an open platform for innovation, end quote. Gloating aside, the FCC has made the budding telecommunications sector of VoIP very happy with its decision to fine Madison River Communication of North Carolina. Jeffrey Citron, CEO of Vonage, the largest provider of VoIP services, has said, quote, we're very pleased that the Commission took very swift action to address the concerns that we had regarding an internet service provider's ability to block our customers' communications with each other. This sends a clear message that port blocking will not be tolerated, end quote. Vonage had originally complained to the FCC that competitors may have been blocking its services. The company was found to be blocking internet traffic that prevented its users from using VoIP technologies. This is Madison River Communication. There is no law against this, but the commission voted to preserve an open internet over restrictions on a part and parcel basis by ISPs. Many telecommunications corporations are becoming more overt in their opposition to VoIP technology, and the motivations for Madison River's decision to block the traffic remains untold.
And that's a little bit of what's going on in our media environment. You're listening to Media Geek. Check us out online at www.mediageek.org. Coming up in just a moment, Calvary Chapel and their burgeoning broadcast empire. How are they doing it? Do stay tuned. And that's a song we guarantee you will not hear on a Calvary Chapel CSN Networks radio station, Judas Priest, Deal with the Devil. I believe that's off their new reunion album, right? Angel of Retribution. That is, I'm afraid the Angel of Retribution is going to come swinging down here on Media Geek if we keep reporting on Calvary Chapel Church and their burgeoning broadcast empire. Anyway, welcome back. John Anderson of DIYmedia.net and Free Press's Media Minutes is joining us once again in the studio because he's been investigating a story and has some information to share with us about FM translator stations.
Yeah, I hope I'm not wearing out my welcome here either, because I was just here like 2 weeks ago.
Well, as long as you keep doing this good research.
Yeah. Okay, so where do you want me to start? Just like with a basic overview of what's been
going on? Well, so Calvary Chapel is a church of sorts out of Twin Falls, Idaho, and out of California.
Well, it appears that the church was founded somewhere in California.
Costa Mesa,
California.
Church.
And it's actually known under a couple of different names. One is Calvary Chapel, and the other one is Horizon Christian Fellowship. And the two are materially linked together. They're non-denominational, but they're some sort of contemporary music-based evangelical Christian organization. Our friend out in Free Radio Santa Cruz, Skidmark Bob, actually emailed me this week after reading some of the stuff that I'd written, and he said that he was involved with the Calvary Chapel Church once, and that they're basically a bunch of burnt-out hippies.
Yeah, they grew out of the Jesus Freak movement,
quote-unquote,
out of the 60s.
Turned themselves over to God, and they've been very active in the Christian music scene for years and years and years, which may imply where they're getting a lot of their money from to do what they're doing on the air now.
And they've assembled, well, the Calvary Chapel out of Twin Falls has assembled a multi-hundred station network empire, mm-hmm. made up primarily of translator stations, which are low-power stations, which may only retransmit the signal of a higher power station, may originate no programming. They all operate with somewhere between 5 and 100 watts.
Up to 250.
Up to 250. And what's interesting about translators, of course, we've mentioned several times in Media Geek, is that they can be squeezed on the dial closer together and closer to full power stations than low power FM community stations.
True.
And they can take up spaces intended for low power community stations, but they may not originate their own programming. And of course, the other thing about a non-commercial translator station is that it does not have to be anywhere near the station it's extending the signal from, whereas mm-hmm. a commercial station must be within the contour of what that commercial station would be expected to reach, but may not because of geography or other sorts of things that get in the way of the signal, especially in mountainous areas or in big cities where there's lots of tall buildings. You can use translators to fill in the gaps, but they can't take a station from New York and fill in a gap in California.
Yeah, right, exactly. Translators were initially set up just to be the types of fill-in rebroadcasters that you were talking about. And they were primarily based for commercial stations to use. In 1990, though, the FCC made some drastic revisions to the rules governing FM translator use. And it was in 1990 when they allowed non-commercial entities particularly to feed translator stations off of a satellite as opposed to piggybacking from a main signal somewhere nearby. And that is the time period that we're talking about from then till now, where we've seen the proliferation of religious broadcasting by using translator stations as low-cost replacements for a full-power station in your network. A translator station you just set up, you tune it to a satellite dish, you have someone pay the power and make sure that it's on, and you let it be. You don't have to pay for local staff to run it.
I don't think they're required to carry any emergency alert.
They're not required to carry any sort of emergency alert system, and you only need to have like a consulting engineer standing by to take a look at things if things go bad, and that doesn't cost anything unless things go bad. And a lot of times religious broadcast networks will get the installation and maintenance costs picked up for these translator stations by local benefactors who think that they're helping, you know, in the evangelistic mission.
And so recently, I guess it was in 2003, the FCC opened up a window, as it's called, for people to apply for new translator licenses. There had been basically a freeze on translators for a long time, and there were thousands upon thousands of applications put in, and a whole bunch of those licenses went to a very small number of organizations.
Yes. When the FCC initially passed the low-power FM community station service back in 2000, one of the reasons why they could do that was because they had kept some FM space on the dial free by not allowing translator stations to apply for them. It was something that the FCC consciously did. They said translators have to wait until we license this new service, and then we'll open up another window for you. Well, because of all that pent-up demand, when the window was opened in 2003, I think it was like 5 days long, 13,000 applications were filed, and of those, one-third came from two companies. The two companies are named Radio Assist Ministry and Edgewater Broadcasting, and they both report back to the same business address in Twin Falls, Idaho. And that's kind of where this whole story starts.
And then the gentleman behind these two is an ex-employee of CSN International, also known as the Calvary Chapel Church of Twin Falls, Idaho, which is behind the huge translator network.
Right, of the Calvary Chapel churches around the country, and there are many, Twin Falls and Costa Mesa, which appear to be the two most involved in the broadcasting side of Calvary Chapel, have worked together and coordinated over the last 15 years to set up a religious broadcast network that includes something like 8 full-power radio stations and several hundred, more than 300, translator stations around the country.
And so,
and this guy who filed all these applications for under these two companies did so based on the experience that he had building this prior network for the Calvary satellite network.
And yet, it doesn't seem the Radio Assist Ministries or Edgewater is currently endeavoring to set up its own network.
No, actually, what's basically happening here is a very smart individual with the assistance of some lawyers in Washington, D.C. and some consulting engineers figured out a way to game the rules, the translator application rules, to basically suck up a bunch of spectrum and hold on to it like a real estate speculator would. This guy and his shadow companies, under which are these multiple names, are effectively selling off the applications collected piecemeal. And like I said, there were more than 4,000 filed. So far, the FCC has granted more than 1,000 of them. I think the last count was 1,026. And if you calculate each one of those worth like a very nominal $5,000, which is an arbitrary figure but lower than what they're actually going for, that works out to this one guy, through his mass filing of translator applications, receiving close to $5 million in public spectrum, which he is then selling off for personal gain.
And who's he selling them to?
Well, he happens to be selling them to other Calvary Chapel organizations around the country, one of which is based in Florida. Calvary Chapel of Fort Lauderdale bought 22 FM translator applications from, I believe it was Radio Assist Ministry, for $326,500.
So essentially, that's like a turnkey radio network.
In fact, this Calvary Chapel of Fort Lauderdale just put a 100,000-watt FM station on the air in Fort Lauderdale last November, which is going to act as the quote-unquote parent station for this translator network all across the state of
now,
Florida.
Now, I would like to look at the FCC has maps you can look at to see what the coverage area, but I reckon Fort Lauderdale, not a hilly area.
No.
100,000 watts should cover a good portion, if not all, of Central Florida.
That's pretty much what it does. In fact, Calvary Chapel of Fort Lauderdale, if you go to their website, which I believe is calvaryftl.org, there's actually something about radio on the front page, and it talks about like a coverage map. And if you click on it, it shows the station, of a map of Florida with the station of the big 100,000-watt station, and then all of these little circles all around the state of Florida. And underneath it says 2005-2006 expansion. And so this organization has obviously been attempting and has been planning on building this type of network for quite some time.
So in addition to having a 100,000-watt transmitter, which covers a good part of Central Florida, then they're filling in other places in Central Florida with the translators?
They're actually filling in places basically all along the coasts, with the exception of the Miami-Dade area, because that one is already massively packed with frequencies. But basically any other major metropolitan area you can think of in Florida, Calvary Chapel of Fort Lauderdale has translators either in the city now or on the edges, shooting the signal into as much of the city as possible.
And these different parts of the spectrum, these different frequencies, a lot of these could go for low-power FM community stations.
Well, that's the sad thing about all this, is the FCC opened this window and received all these applications, and so far, as we know, just from these two companies, which filed all these applications from one guy, so far they've moved more than 1,000 channels, potential channels for low-power FM radio stations, off the market. They've been taken right off the market by this company who is applying to sell them to religious entities. And those stations, those channels otherwise, yes, very well could have gone for free to real, live, local community radio stations.
And those could have been owned by church entities or local churches who would broadcast them locally, or they could go to community radio stations, they could go to schools, they could go to all sorts of different organizations.
Yeah, well, that's another thing that's interesting about Calvary Chapel, is they have actively worked with other Calvary Chapel churches around the country to set up low-power FM radio stations for those churches.
And they offer them their satellite broadcasting apparently up to the legal limit.
16 hours a day, 7 days a week, which is just exactly the legal limit that an LPFM station could operate off of a bird like that.
Indeed, I think they actually, in many cases, have started up churches in local towns simply for the sake of getting these translator applications.
Well, it's the interesting thing about the Cavalry Chapel Church. It's very different from a lot of typical churches and denominations in that it doesn't necessarily affiliate or authorize specific churches. What it affiliates pastors.
Yeah, I like.
And each pastor can go out and start up his own church, which essentially he's the boss of that church, and then it's a Calvary Chapel, so it's much less centralized than like the Catholic Church or even mainstream Protestant denominations.
The word that I came up to be most descriptive when I was trying to think about how Calvary Chapel operates, it's that it's a brand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a type of brand, and if a minister wants to use the Calvary Chapel brand, they have to go to Costa Mesa, California, and talk to the gatekeepers who hold the rights to use the Calvary Chapel brand, and then individual ministers are given permission to use that, and then they can go out and set up their own churches and therefore play off the Calvary Chapel or Horizon Christian Fellowship brand.
But the result is that you end up with all these Calvary Chapel radio stations carrying anything from 16 to 24 hours a day of the programming that are only sort of affiliated, if that's even the right word, with the Calvary Chapel of Twin Falls, but not necessarily part of the same organization. And so there's this level of plausible deniability on
right.
the part of the folks at Calvary Chapel Twin Falls, especially with regard to people putting in low-power FM licenses with really, you know, what had happened a year ago is that a whole pile of people put in low-power FM license applications as Calvary Chapel churches, and they were identical applications. And the FCC saw that, I mean, and pulled them out and said, we're denying these all together because we do not believe that this is part of the way the service is supposed to be. They do not look like local organizations. Looks like cookie-cutter endeavors to basically put up satellite-driven radio stations that, you know, we have no real belief or prediction that they'll actually obey the full power rules. But Calvary Chapel of Twin Falls emailed me directly to say, that's not us.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I mean, once again, I need to reiterate that there's nothing that's been confirmed illegal in anything that Calvary Chapel or its representatives have been doing with the public airwaves here, but it is highly unethical and highly collusional to an extent that that doesn't seem to demonstrate Christian behavior as I have been taught to see it exemplified in the world. Who would know the answer to this is Clark Parrish. He is the person who actually is the president of Radio Assist Ministry and Edgewater Broadcasting. So he is the person who executed the 4,000-plus applications that were filed, and he is the one who ostensibly has been coordinating the sell-off piecemeal of the channels that he has received to these various Calvary Chapel organizations. The other person who would know a lot about this is Dawn Sciarino. She happens to be an attorney with her own law firm that exclusively works at the FCC and is representing Radio Assist Ministry and Edgewater Broadcasting in all of the transactions that are taking place with the paperwork that has to be filed to the FCC saying, we are selling this station to this person for this X amount of money. And the third person who would probably know all of the intricacies behind this deal is a guy by the name of Harry C. Miller. He is listed on the FCC applications for the purchase and sale of these translator stations for every single Calvary Chapel group involved. So he is a link between the deals of this of these shadow groups and the different supposedly unorganized Calvary Chapel entities around the country supposedly autonomously buying their own translator networks. He's doing it all for the group as an entirety. He's the same representative for each Calvary Chapel. He happens to be the president of the Federal Communications Bar Association. He is the top communications dog lawyer in the trade industry that represents all communications dog lawyers that do business with the FCC or with Congress.
So this goes right to the top.
So obviously, no one at the FCC is going to look at these massive amounts of applications that are being churned through, the amounts of frequencies that are being wasted for religious translators that could have been applied for low-power radio, the massive amount of money that is being skimmed off of a public resource for gains that are not necessarily, I think, the most holy. But he's like the head of the head trade organization of lawyers. I mean, who at the FCC is going to challenge that?
And you are listening to Media Geek. We're here every week with News of Our Media Environment, as well as looking deep into the grassroots and the independent media. My name is Paul Reese, and I'm your host. Drew Tirico, producer, is over there at the controls. Our guest here is John Anderson of DIYmedia.net and Free Press's Media Minutes. And we're talking about Calvary Chapel Church and its large radio empire and how it's getting larger through the use of translator stations, which are low-power stations that may not broadcast local content, may only broadcast satellite content, and in fact are allowed to be squeezed on to the dial in places where low-power FM stations, the non-commercial type, the community radio type, cannot be put. And I think that's the interesting thing, because Calvary Chapel and other churches like them have actually lobbied the FCC and lobbied congresspeople against low-power FM, because they see the low-power FM stations, the community type, as a threat to their translator networks, since it's taking up frequencies. And they can't use those the low-power FM stations to broadcast their satellite signals 24 hours a day.
Yeah, well, the funny thing is on one hand, they may lobby and say that, but on the other hand, they're working actively with LPFM applicants and to sign up low-power FM radio stations as affiliates. As you mentioned, Calvary Chapel is not the only organization or organizations, as Calvary Chapel is, out there doing this. The American Family Association, one of the largest Christian right lobbying groups in the country, runs its own network, American Family Radio, which is engaged in the same kind of speculation, albeit on a definitely smaller scale. But still a pretty egregious amount of speculation that's going on. There are religious broadcast networks of this type that run the theological gamut from the Southern Baptist to the Calvary Chapel non-denominational evangelicals to the conservative traditionalist Christian Roman Catholic folks. This is something that's kind of endemic to the world of religious radio.
And these are all also frequencies, translator frequencies, that could have been used by even the likes of WEFT to fill in our signal, let's say, in the outer reaches of our signal area, such as Decatur, Danville, Bloomington Normal, or any community station, a full-power community station, to extend the reach, or just fill in gaps, especially in mountainous regions like you have in Boulder, Colorado.
Yes, a quick example of something like that taking place right now is in Boston. Currently to the west of Boston, Calvary Chapel has an AM radio station, which only covers about the west half of the city. And they've applied for an FM signal that would be directionally based just south of Boston and would basically shoot over the eastern half of the city. Now, in the place where they've set the station up and on the frequency that they've set it up, they've done it so that it just fits within the rules as far as interference protection goes. But it's going to be a 21,000-watt station that's basically going to be repeating an AM station on the other side of town, so that Calvary Chapel has the ability to cover the entire Boston metro area with two signals. To me, that's a significant waste of spectrum that could have gone for other uses and other voices.
And the other problem is that it's actually encroaching on that large station may encroach on some college stations, very low power college stations in the Boston area.
Very true.
In fact, I received a letter in the mail just the other day from the faculty advisor to one of these stations, and I hope to get her on the show so we can talk a little bit more about that. And there was an article in the Boston Phoenix, which we posted to the Media Geek blog today, which gives you some more information about that and how they're sort of triangulating in these small, non-commercial college stations that are sort of much more true to community radio than big satellite-driven stations.
Mm-hmm.
Well, John, all this data is on your website?
Yeah, DIYmedia.net. Just hit the front page. There's two posts that you should specifically look at. One, I think, is the February 25th, and the other one is March 1st. And click within the links and then read the links within the post, and you will learn just a massive scandal that seems to still have pieces that are coming to the surface. I don't know when this is going to end. I hope other people start helping on this, too.
That's right.
So if you're interested, you can dig into the FCC data as well. Get in touch with myself or Paul, and we can actually show you how to get started in that.
Yeah, and post it to your local indie media website or share it with other local media activists. You can send it off to me, Paul, at MediaGeek.org. And, of course, the Media Geek website is www.MediaGeek.org, where I also have pointers to John's articles and some other information that I've dug up on this. And we will both continue to be covering it, and we'll bring it to you here on Media Geek. That brings to a close another edition of Media Geek. We'll be back in 1 week with more news and views on our media environment. In the meantime, check out Media Geek on the web at www.mediageek.org. There you can read the Media Geek blog for news that can't fit onto the show, as well as download archive episodes of the program in MP3 in the open source Ogg Vorbis format. If you have any comments about the program, please send them to paul@mediageek.org. I'm host and executive producer Paul Riesmandel. Our producer is Drew Tirico. Media Geek is produced live at community radio station WEFT in Champaign, Illinois. Some pre-production happens at the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center. Media Geek is also heard on KRFP, Radio Free Moscow in Moscow, Idaho, and on KQRP in Salida, California. And Media Geek is free to broadcast on your local non-commercial station, too. To inquire, please send email to paul@mediageek.org. Thanks for tuning in.